Today, Scott Morrison and the truth about climate change. We're only a few weeks into summer and the fire crisis is rolling on.
We've got fires effectively stretching now from the Queensland border right down to our far south coast area.
On the east coast, fires have been burning since September, decimating towns and licking at the edges of major suburbs and cities.
There are more than 80 blazes burning across the state, and the real fear is that any of those could flare at any time.
And across New South Wales, the state has been blanketed in smoke for weeks.
Now, we have got used to, over the last couple of months, getting warnings that people, elderly people, small children, people with heart and lung conditions shouldn't be going out in the smoke.
With air pollution in some areas reaching levels never seen before, higher than cities like Beijing and Delhi.
Sydney has been choking on smoke today, with air quality in parts of New South Wales the worst in almost a decade.
No one knows how long the smoke will linger for. It all depends on the bushfires that continue to burn across the state.
The depressing part is that it's becoming the new norm.
Understandably, people are scared. And they've been looking to politicians, specifically to Prime Minister Scott Morrison, for leadership.
My simple message to Australians is to listen carefully to the warnings that are there, to follow those instructions.
But in the past few weeks, the issue hasn't really been front and centre of the political agenda.
To check on that fires near me app, it is an incredibly invaluable tool. I think it has been such a great support.
And then this Tuesday, in a hazardously smoky Sydney, Scott Morrison fronts up to the media with a big announcement. His chosen topic? An update about a draft bill that won't go before Parliament until next year.
The purpose of asking you here today is to provide you with an update on what we're doing in relation to the Religious Discrimination Act.
Well, on Tuesday, it was a bit strange. Smoke was pouring into Sydney. People were choking, having asthma attacks, just sort of texting one another pictures of their masks.
Catherine Murphy is Guardian Australia's political editor.
You know, it was obviously a very discomforting atmosphere. The Prime Minister and the Attorney General stood up for 25 minutes and spoke about their religious discrimination bill.
What people believe in this country or don't believe when it comes to the big questions of life, which
now,
is really
the government
religion
needed
and faith
to do that
about,
for a bunch of reasons. It needed person. That bill out before Christmas. But it was a very strange juxtaposition to be standing up talking about religious discrimination on a day where all that anyone really around the country was talking about was the fires and the impact of the fires. So I was watching this rather strange press conference of these two guys talking about religious discrimination. I was back in Canberra. This press conference was in Sydney. I was getting increasingly agitated because nobody was asking about the bushfires. This was the second press conference of the day. At the first press conference, the Prime Minister had not been asked about it. Then there was this rather strange second press conference. He still wasn't asked about it. I was getting agitated. But then our colleague Helen Davidson swung into the rescue.
Prime Minister, sorry, on the bushfire crisis today, will you be coordinating a national response, as was suggested by...
And she asked him several questions about the bushfire, several substantial questions about the bushfires.
We already do. I think one of the great encouragements that I've seen through this process is...
Which sort of elicited a defensive response from the Prime Minister.
I believe those calls are for that national coordination that's occurring now to be led at a higher level within the federal government.
I think the volunteer firefighters, should we be looking at starting to pay them?
And that defensive response kind of kicked off another news cycle that was negative for the government.
And what did he say to those questions about the smoke and about the fires?
Well, it was the same message, Laura, that the government has been transmitting for several weeks now. The message is, we are coordinating this.
I think one of the great encouragements that I've seen through this process is we've had a nationally coordinated operation.
We're throwing a lot of resources at it. We're very engaged. We're talking to people in the field.
The chiefs work closely together. They have a direct line to me. They have a direct line to the premiers.
We know what's happening. We've got this under control. And we don't want to have a debate about a whole bunch of side issues right now.
We've been able, I think, to respond to what has been one of the most serious fire seasons we have seen so far.
So it sounds like he's trying to say that we're in control. Are the public buying that message, though?
It's difficult for Scott Morrison. I think we should say that. It is really difficult. If you're a political leader in the middle of a major disaster, you don't want to be a bushfire tourist. You don't want to be poking your nose in every 5 minutes, disrupting containment efforts. You don't want to be seen from profiting from a disaster politically. You're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. If you don't poke your nose in, people say, why aren't you poking your nose in? If you do poke your nose in, then people say, well, you know, get your nose out of here. So there's that level of difficulty. And then there's the level of difficulty associated with the government saying climate change is under control and the community saying, yeah, nah, not so much.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison held a national media conference on religious freedom with almost 3,000 firefighters battling over 80 blazes in New South Wales alone. When a major city is choking and all of these other places are literally on fire. Do you think ScoMo's read the room wrong here?
They are not responding properly to this emergency, and it's time we demanded that they did.
Green Senator Maureen Faruqi's response, tweeting the Prime Minister to just off.
So it sounds like people want action, and he's not giving it on multiple fronts.
Well, I think the sort of theme of the week has been a very anxious community wanting reassurance, wanting action, wanting intervention, and the Prime Minister for much of the week hanging back and not gratifying that sentiment, I suppose. That's what's made it a difficult week for Morrison, is that he's been out of step with where the community has been in relation to this incident.
How did Scott Morrison react to this, criticism?
Well, by the end of the week, it was really interesting. The Prime Minister was all of a sudden on the front foot. He had a press conference on Thursday before anyone even asked him about it, saying this is a national emergency.
Of course this is a national disaster. We all understand that. And in the States, there have been various declarations that have been
made. He was out of the blocks about the fires. He was empathising.
I've lived all my life pretty much in Sydney. And the haze that has come from those fires, I know, has been deeply troubling to Sydney siders.
He was repeating something that he has said in the past but hasn't said for quite some time, that there's a link between climate change and the sort of fire event that we've seen over the last couple of weeks. So he affirmed that.
That there are many contributing factors that relate to these fires. The drought is obviously, and the dryness of the bush is the biggest factor. And we all know, as I acknowledged earlier this year in February, that climate change, along with many other factors, contribute to what is occurring today.
There wasn't any substantial shift in Morrison's messaging. He's still saying to voters, don't you worry, government's got this, climate change, it's all fine, it's under control, we've got the policies, it's all good, don't you worry about it, eat your peas, you know, all that stuff. He's still doing all that. So there wasn't a substantial change in his or the government's position on Thursday. But the really interesting thing about Thursday's outing was that he was on the offensive, acknowledging the community debate and framing it on the government's terms, or trying to frame it on the government's terms.
And I think even acknowledging that climate change contributed to the fires is significant within this week, within this month or this summer for the public.
Well, absolutely. This has been one of the frustrations where the public has broken the containment lines that politicians have put up about this climate change debate. Gladys Berejiklian and Scott Morrison, they've said now is not the time to talk about climate change. We've got this bushfire on foot. We're not talking about it now. The public has basically said get nicked to that and had a wild old conversation about it. So on Thursday, Morrison acknowledged that. He made the link himself. He said that previously, but he made it very explicitly on Thursday, which was a kind of empathetic point with the public while backing in the government's main messages on climate change, which is it's all under control, even though it's not.
Next, Scott Morrison's game plan on climate change. Does Scott Morrison have a usual game plan for talking about climate change?
If we look at Scott Morrison and climate change, what he's done since he's taken the prime ministership is tell the country to calm down. He's done that over and over again about climate change. He's basically told the country, look, we've got this under control. Sure, you hear some loud, noisy voices, protesters, clicktivists, people with the armbands, whatever. Sure, you hear all those crazy nut jobs out there saying, oh, the sky's falling in. But I'm telling you, I'm a sensible guy and I've got this under control. Mm. That has been a very, very important foundation of his messaging on climate change. Mm. Now, the problem he's got at the moment is that we've got a major event, which is which is related to climate change, which points us forward to the future, and it doesn't look like we've got it under control. So then you get a gap between political messaging and reality, and that is quite a difficult set of circumstances for Scott Morrison to find himself in, because then the government loses control of the narrative. It loses control of public discussion of this very important issue. And I think that that dynamic is part of the reason we've seen Scott Morrison pull back in this event, because it's hard to know what to say when reality doesn't line up with your rhetoric.
So basically Morrison's got this game plan to say we have got climate change under control. How important is that game plan to him and his identity in his prime ministership?
The short answer, the short answer, love, is very important, because the language he constructed around climate change was very deliberate. He only had a short time to introduce himself to the Australian public before the election. The guy he wanted to present to the Australian public was a sensible, middle-of-the-road, practical, don't sweat the small stuff, don't shriek and shout, don't be political sort of character, right? Like a roll-up-the-sleeves, suburban, you know, suburban head of the Rotary Club or, you know, whatever, right? This was the character he wanted to present to the public. He wanted to tell voters who are concerned about climate change, don't worry, I'm not Tony Abbott. I'm not crazy on this stuff. I don't deny climate change is happening. I've tweaked our policies a bit to make it look as though we're slightly better on climate change than we were during the Abbott period. I'm very calm, sober and sensible, right? That was the message for the metro elections. That was the message for the cities where voters are concerned about climate change and where voters will change their vote about climate change. That was the message, one of reassurance, right? In the regions, we saw the coalition do something entirely different. We saw some very, very effective local campaigning, narrow casting, where climate change was weaponised.
How so? What did they do?
Well, there's messaging to coal workers, Labor's coming for your jobs. Messages to working people more generally, you know, Labor's coming for your ute or your SUV. And then that message then looped back into the national campaign, which is that Labor crazy on this stuff. They will wreck the economy with this stuff that will impact your jobs, right? So it was actually very clever.
And this messaging around climate change that he had set up, you know, in the election, is he pretty much stuck with it now?
Yes, this whole construction of this delicate construction Scott Morrison's made for himself about climate. I'm not crazy, I'm sensible and sober and practical. And by the way, Labor's coming for your ute. That was an election winning formula for them. So it will be difficult for them to walk back from that formula.
Scott Morrison has come into power saying he has climate change under control. Does the coalition have climate change under control, though? What is their track record?
Oh, dear. I just made a noise. Okay. Well, look, let's look at the track record, right? Rather than sort of laughing sardonically, let's look at the track record. The record is terrible. The record is indefensible. The record is wreck, wreck, wreck. That is the record. We had a carbon price. Tony Abbott repealed it. It was clear at the time and remains so in hindsight, an extraordinary act of political vandalism. So to take a policy that was extremely difficult to legislate and implement and repeal it, basically because of politics, is an extraordinary act of vandalism. I don't use these words lightly. Tony Abbott then went to war on the renewable energy target. He almost gutted and destroyed that. He didn't succeed. That whole period was about disrupting and setting back the cause of climate action. That played out over the best part of a decade. The record speaks for itself. The record is a disaster. The record is indefensible.
Why is the track record so bad? What is happening within the party?
Well, there are a group of people, mainly in the right of the Liberal Party and in the national parties, who have real difficulties accepting the science of climate change. Now, the person who's, rather than take my word for that, I think we can trust the person who had the window seat on this whole internal difficulty that the Liberal Party has had for more than a decade. That person's Malcolm Turnbull. We spoke to him recently. Here's what he said about it.
The problem with the right in the right-wing group in the Liberal Party is that they operate like terrorists. Now, I'm not suggesting they throw bombs or blow people up or anything like that, but their technique is to say, unless you do what we want, we will blow the joint up.
Well, he said that there is an element in the right of the Liberal Party who just can't process these issues, who can't face up to the scientific reality of climate change.
You know, the tragedy of our times in politics on this issue is that what should be a factual scientific issue has become an issue of identity. And I mean, Greta Thunberg nailed it when she said, I come to America, and in America they've got the same phenomenon, and people talk about believing climate change. Well, she said in Europe it's regarded as a question of fact, and so it should be. It's like saying, do you believe in gravity?
So these guys, you know, the Liberal Party really struggles. There are elements of the Liberal Party that really struggle with climate change. They struggle to accept the science, and they also struggle with the temptation to keep weaponizing this issue, because history shows, sadly, in this country, weaponizing climate change has worked for the Liberal and National parties. It's worked. So they will continue to do it as long as it works.
Is there a voice of reason on climate change in conservative Australian politics? Are there people who feel differently?
Well, this is a good thing to dwell on. I've presented the Liberal Party rather monolithically in this conversation as, you know, being a bunch of people who have wrecked climate action, and the Liberal and National parties are a bunch of people who have wrecked climate action. We should not mince words about that. That is exactly what has occurred. But opinion in the Liberal and National parties, both federally and in the states, is not monolithic. Everybody doesn't think the same thing. There are a bunch of people in the Liberal Party, both federally and at the state level, Matt Keane being the obvious and loudest voice, the Environment Minister in New South Wales, saying, guys, climate change is happening.
Hotter days, less rain, more drought, worse air quality. That is what the scientists have told us climate change looks like, and we need to take decisive and responsible action to deal with it.
There's a massive energy revolution in play, which Australia can benefit from economically and environmentally. We need to lean into this to the maximum degree. So, and there are people around the federal sphere who say that as well. Interestingly, Arthur Sinodinos, who is, you know, was a long, long time political staffer, bureaucrat, and senator, he's just gone off to wrangle Donald Trump in Washington. He's the ambassador in Washington, said several times over the last few months, basically saying politely to Scott Morrison in public, Scott, you have an opportunity to reposition on this issue, to construct a big tent in the political centre. Mm. The Liberal and National parties can take sensible climate action that doesn't crash the economy. We can stop treating this as a culture war. We can do something constructive. We can settle 10 years of partisan disagreement. And that's on us. That is down to us. That opportunity is before us. So, and there are a number of people in the government who feel that way.
He may be getting this advice, but whenever Scott Morrison speaks about climate change, he is pretty adamant that we're meeting our emissions targets, that we're on track, right?
Well, yes, but that's sort of true, but not true. Just to be very, very clear about what's happening here, Australia will not meet its Paris target, the 2030 Paris target, by reducing emissions. We will meet about half of the Paris target by reducing emissions. The other half we will meet through an accounting trick. So we are, in essence, Australia is doing about half of the heavy lifting associated with the target that we've signed up to. So yes, we might meet it. Yes, we might turn up in Paris triumphantly in 2030 and say, we complied with the letter of our agreement. But the reality is, again, if we look at what's happened, there is no coherent policy in the energy sector. The climate architecture that's been implemented by this government is deeply suboptimal, doesn't work, doesn't reduce emissions, you know, doesn't deal with industrial pollution, which is, you know, one of the biggest problems we've got. Again, we are not doing what we need to be doing at this point in time in order to reduce emissions in this country. And not only are we not doing what we should be doing to reduce emissions in Australia, by our behaviour internationally, by saying we want to meet our Paris or half the quantity of our Paris target through carryover credits, we're basically saying to other nations like us, hey guys, look for the workarounds. Look for the tricks, look for the loopholes. You know, that is not responsible at this point in history, at this point in an international negotiation for a country as respected as Australia to be adopting that stance.
Do you think that all this momentum and the fire crisis could actually lead the Coalition and Scott Morrison to a deeper shift on climate change, and or at least their messaging on climate change?
We've sort of, to bring this whole conversation together, it is very difficult for a Liberal leader to shift and shift significantly. If the big tanker is going to be turned around, the big destructive tanker is going to be turned around, that will have to be done very carefully and judiciously in terms of how you get agreement from colleagues to do that. But I think Morrison is capable of doing that. I do think he is capable of doing that. I think the politics might mean that it is desirable in their minds for them to reposition slightly on these issues. But having watched this whole debacle with a front row seat for more than a decade, I wouldn't bet the house on that. I think it's possible, but I wouldn't go as far as probable.
Do we have a situation where the politics of one party is getting in the way of real leadership and big change that we need to tackle such a big issue that is climate change and these, you know, big emergencies that are popping up?
Well, that is exactly the position that we've been in Australia for the last 10 years. That is exactly what's happened. Politics has trumped substance. Politics has trumped solving a practical problem. That is where we've been. That is the nightmare that we have been stuck in for the best part of a decade. Now, the problem with being stuck in that nightmare is the longer you delay action, the longer you delay turning this ship around, the harder it becomes. Now, the government is hoping genuinely that technological advances over the coming decade will make some of this transition more painless than it would otherwise be. We're waiting for the magic that, you know, vacuums carbon from the atmosphere or, you know, whatever fantastic technological wizardry might turn up in the next decade. Now, I have like limitless faith in human ingenuity. It is entirely possible this is the decade we crack the capacity to try and do something transformational. But you would be a mug. You would be the biggest mug in the village, sitting around waiting for that to happen. This transition that we're talking about will take 3 decades. It needs to be planned, it needs to be orderly, and the people who are affected by it need to have some confidence that there is a role for them as citizens and participants in an economy. That is what we need to do. We needed to start doing this 20 years ago. As it happens, we haven't done it. So every day, every month, every year we delay this transition, the harder it's going to be for Australia.
That's it for today. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the show. Just search for Full Story on whatever app you get your podcasts on. We would also love to hear what you think about it so far. So if you are on an app that has ratings and reviews, let us know. Thanks to Catherine Murphy for her time. You can read her political reporting and analysis at theguardian.com. This episode was produced by Joe Koning and Ellen Leibeater, and our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. Okay, catch you Monday.